There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. And tonight we have another terrific trio for you. Suspense will bring us the man who couldn't lose. And Weird Circle will bring double trouble with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But first, a little story I think you'll enjoy, starring Bela Lugosi, a man like myself. If you can call us men, After all, we've been friends for a very long time. Several hundred years, in fact. So maybe it wasn't several hundred years, but quite a long time, nevertheless. We had the same, how do you say, spirit? Yes. Colleagues used to say we were both dyed from the same casket, huh? One difference, however, is I'm still around. For Bella, the stakes got too high. All the way to his heart. But I warned him. No, really, I did. I said, Bella, it will drive you to an early grave. Oh, well, we still stay in touch. In fact, just the other night, I wired him an epitaph. And so, in that vein, allow me to present to you Bela Lugosi and the Thirsty Death.
This is Bela Lugosi, welcoming you to Mystery House.
Mystery House, starring Bela Lugosi. Mystery House, where live again the stories of the greatest mystery theater the world has ever known, the Grand Guignol of Paris. Mystery House, where tonight the distinguished actor John Carradine joins Bela Lugosi in presenting The Thirsty Death. Good evening, folks. This is Ken Carpenter. If I sound a little nervous, it's not really my fault. I'm usually a pretty steady guy, calm as anyone, but, well, this is asking too much. Bela Lugosi alone is enough to scare you. John Carradine isn't exactly soothing to your nerves, but put them together in a story set in darkest Africa with mad dogs howling in the background and, find out for yourself.
The curtain rises on The Thirsty Death, starring Bela Lugosi and his guest at Mystery House, John Carradine. Do you hear those native drums? Do you know what they're saying? Yves Plazon does. That is why her heart is pounding to the mounting cadence of those ceaseless drums. That's why she's hurrying faster, faster, hurrying through the North African forest in the oppressive heat of this humid afternoon. And that is why Mallard, her native houseboy, follows unwillingly, his eyes rolling fearfully in their wide sockets.
Mallard, faster. Walk faster.
Missus, please, better we go by.
Don't talk such nonsense.
But, Missus, Thirsty Death walks. All around us is Thirsty Death. You hear, Missus? Do you hear?
Oh, stop gibbering like a frightened child. Anyway, we've gone too far to turn back now.
No.
We're almost halfway to the village.
No. Better we go back. Better we... Go back.
Mallard.
Go back. No.
leave me here alone. Marlon! Marlon! Let me in. Open the door and let me in.
Eve, it is you.
Rene.
I couldn't believe my own ear. Come in, come in.
Oh, I had no idea this was your house, Rene. I knew you lived somewhere near here, but...
What happened?
I was on my way to the village when Mallard, my houseboy, became frightened and ran away. There was a mad dog somewhere near.
Well, so I have something to thank the epidemic for, after all. Who would have thought back in Paris that we should meet again like this?
Oh, Rene, please.
Yes, forgive me. I was so taken away at seeing you. But sit down. Let me pour you some water.
Oh, thank you.
Here, drink. Not thirsty. You'll make yourself ill.
More, please.
Well, a little more will be all right, I suppose.
I never knew before what thirst could mean.
And imagine those poor devils out there, hundreds of them who have hydrophobia.
Eve.
Whatever induced you to set foot outside your door?
Oh, it was foolhardy of me, I know. My husband had to leave for the coast to be gone at least a week. And the prospect of being shut in all alone, except for my terrified houseboy.
Yes, the natives are in a dreadful panic. My own houseboy, Gildas, ran off and deserted me yesterday. But you say you were on your way to the village.
Well, perhaps you know the Chabours. I was going to stay with them until Francois, my husband, returned.
Eve, are you happy with him?
Him? You mean my husband? Of course we're happy, very happy.
Then why, when I first learned who the new doctor and his wife were, did you send back word by Gildas that I would not be welcome in your home?
Because
you were afraid that seeing me might rekindle our love? Wasn't that it?
No, Ray. It's because Francois is such a jealous husband.
Middle-aged men with beautiful young wives usually are.
Well, I'm rested now. I must be on my way to the village. If I'm to make it by nightfall.
But you can't go out there again.
I must. Oh! Rene, you loved me once.
I love you still.
Then go with me. Take me to the village.
Very well. But you're still tired. Rest a bit longer, and then we'll start.
Strange, isn't it, Rene? But...
strange and wonderful. And doesn't it prove something to you, Eve? When you sent me away back there in Paris, because your parents wished you to marry this Dr. Plassin, I chose the farthest, most inaccessible, most uncivilized spot I could think of.
Yet here I am, too.
Eve.
With my husband.
Does he know that you are once in love with another? With me?
With another, yes. I'm not sure. Oh, those dogs.
You set one spine a-tingling. I'll have my gun, of course.
Hydrophobia turned him into such a snarling, howling, frothing beast that they had to smother in between two mattresses.
Oh, it's a ghastly disease. And yet there are fools, criminal fools, who refuse to obey the order that all dogs be killed. I didn't hesitate to kill all four of my pets. Eve, why do you suddenly look at me like that?
Oh, nothing.
There's a dog in your home, isn't there?
Yes.
What that sheer folly?
Francois refuses to do away with him. That's another reason why I couldn't bear to remain home. I was afraid.
What manner of man is this husband of yours?
He says he needs the dog for experiments. Please, Rene, we mustn't delay any longer. It gets dark so suddenly out here.
Very well. I'll get my gun.
Rene.
What's the matter?
Somebody's outside.
Probably Gildas, that poor houseboy of mine, coming back at last.
No, it...
Eve, who was it you said you saw just through the windows? Why do you...
My husband.
Your husband? About what you say.
He mustn't find me here, Rene. He's so insanely jealous, he'll think he mustn't find me here.
Wait, go upstairs. There's a bedroom.
All right.
Who's there? Oh, good evening.
Good evening, monsieur. I'm Dr. Plaisant.
Oh, new doctor. Well, won't you come in?
Thank you.
I am René Bramant.
Yes, I've heard of you. I think that back in Paris we had a mutual friend.
You must be mistaken, my dear doctor. I am from Marseille.
So, you are an obliging host.
To your health, Dr. Plaisant.
And yours, Monsieur Bremont. Blended liqueur. I must say, a comfortable place you have here.
Thank you, doctor.
This, I presume, is your living room.
It's a very small place.
Just the kind of place that would appeal to my wife. We're thinking of building next year, and if you don't mind, I like to take a look at the bedroom.
No, That is, I'd rather you didn't.
Bedroom is occupied, perhaps?
Of course not. I'm here all alone.
Then?
Well, doctor, I might as well confess.
Yes?
Gildas, my houseboy, deserted me yesterday. Well, the bedroom is in a frightful mess. I must ask you to wait until some other time to see it.
As you wish.
And now, doctor, at the risk of seeming a rude host, I must remind you that it will soon be dark.
You think I should be on my way?
After all, Dr. Poisson, you of all people should be aware of the menace that lurks in the forest. There's still mad dogs loose, and after dark...
Oh, yes. Those mad dogs. And me, completely out of serum.
Out of serum? Good heavens! Can't you get some more?
The whole district has run out. I intended leaving for the coast today to get a supply, but...
Yes?
But something very significant came to my attention. So I sent someone else.
Doctor, it's such a long trip. Why? This means that for at least a week, every case of hydrophobia in this district must necessarily be fatal.
Yes, monsieur. And what ghastly cases we had. Death so horrible that even I, who have seen so much of death, was utterly revolted.
And yet you are so rash as to keep a dog in your own house.
What's that, monsieur? What's that? You know I have a dog? Then she told you.
She? I don't know who you mean.
Who told you?
Gildas, my houseboy, Gildas. You know how these natives chatter. He heard it from your houseboy.
A most unusual servant, that Gildas. First leaves your bedroom a frightful mess so that I can't see it. And now he tells you about a dog.
Dr. Poisson, you must do away with the dog. It's too dangerous. Why, just think if your wife...
Your solicitude for my wife's safety touches me deeply, Monsieur Grimaud. Too bad she couldn't be along with me on this present.
Yes, it is.
But perhaps we shall all three be together quite soon. Goodbye, monsieur.
Goodbye, doctor. Yeah. Eve, you can come down now.
Oh, Renee. Oh, I was so frightened. I can hardly stand.
You're pale as a ghost. Here, sit down.
I thought he'd never go. When he asked to see the bedroom...
Eve. He knew you were here.
You think so?
His very manner in asking to see the bedroom. And his reaction when I forgot myself and spoke of the dog.
Yes, yes. I tried to tell myself otherwise, but I know it's true. Didn't he even speak of a mutual friend in Paris? He meant me.
Of course.
He knows we were once sweethearts. And now, the way things happen...
Don't, Eve, don't. I can't bear to see you like this. What if he does know? You've done no wrong. God knows you've been a faithful wife.
But he... I told you how jealous Francois is. He'll never believe the truth, never.
What kind of a devil is he? That you should cower and cringe before him.
Oh, you don't know what he's capable of.
Then why don't you divorce him? You don't love him, you never have.
He'd never consent to a divorce. He's told me so.
Then leave him anyway. Eve, darling, come away with me. Come away to the other end of the earth. I'll make you happy, I swear I will. Everything we once hoped and dreamed together...
Oh, Renee, don't, please. You're only making me feel worse. As long as I'm his wife, I couldn't.
Yes. I suppose I knew that.
Look, night has closed in already. We've got...
Eve, what's the matter? If I hadn't caught you then, you'd have fallen.
Oh, it's just nerves. I'll be all right. We've got to start for the village at once, Renee.
But you're in no condition to ever make it here. Do you realize how far it is?
Yes, but I...
Those mad dogs prowling in the blackness of the forest?
But I can't stay here.
Why not? You can have the bedroom upstairs. I'll sleep down here on the couch.
Do you think he'd ever believe that?
Listen, I have an idea. Why didn't I think of it before? Some friends of mine, an elderly couple, have a place down by the river. I'll take you there at dawn. They'll say you were here all the time.
You really think they will?
Positive, and Eve, we were probably wrong about your husband knowing you were here. We just imagine things. Everything's going to turn out all right.
Renee! Renee! nightmare. I woke up screaming.
Poor thing. Why, you're actually trembling.
What time is it?
Well, as a matter of fact, we'd have had to get up soon anyway. It's just about dawn.
Well, then if you don't mind, I'll go back downstairs with you. I hate to be alone.
Sure thing. I'll start right in fixing breakfast. I had a restless night, too. Wouldn't be a bit surprised if I was going to have another bout of malaria.
My head's spinning, and I ache all over.
Sit down. I like the lamp.
Yes, too. It's eerie black.
Oh, I hate a match.
Oh, there. The light from the lamp makes me feel better already. I can almost laugh at my horrible dream now.
Was it about the dogs?
Yes, about the little dog Milo that my husband refused to kill. I dreamed that right before my eyes, the dog changed into the shadowy figure of a man.
No wonder you woke up screaming.
But that was only the beginning of the dream. It seemed to me that I woke up there in the bedroom upstairs, and the shadowy figure was leaning over me. I was so paralyzed with fright, I couldn't move.
And then what happened?
And then I heard this thing go out of my room and close the door. Then it seemed to me that I lay there an eternity, trying to scream, but unable to utter a sound. Finally, I found my voice.
Eve.
Renee, you do look ill. I hadn't noticed before how...
Eve, I had a strange dream, too. I also dreamed that a shadowy figure was moving about in here.
No.
And then I dreamed the figure went out and barred the doors and windows from the outside.
Renee, look. The windows are barred.
Yes.
Quick, the door, test it.
Well, we must still be dreaming. It can't be. It's true. The door is locked and barred from the outside. Oh, whoever you are there, open the door.
We've got to get out of here. We've got to get out of here.
Well, I hope you're not frightened yet, because this isn't anything. Wait till you hear Bela Lugosi and John Carradine in the second act of The Thirsty Death. And wait till you hear those howling dogs.
We left Eve Pazan and Rene Bremond beating senselessly on the barred door. The barred door which keeps them prisoners there in the Subramon's lodge, remote in the North African forest. As we return to them now in the ghostly dawn, they are still hammering their fists on the door in a fit of panic, still shouting hopelessly for help.
Stop, Eve! Stop! Stop it, Eve! We're behaving like panicky children. We've got to be calm. We've got to think this thing through like rational human beings.
Calm, Renee? Rational?
Yes, of course. We wake up and find the door and windows barred from the outside. Now, is that any reason to give way to terror?
Shadowy figure, Renee. He must have had a purpose. A ghastly purpose.
Nonsense. He only existed in your imagination. And I dare say you transplanted him to mine. For all we know, Gildas may have done this just as a joke.
You don't really believe that, Renee?
Certainly I do. Or if it wasn't Gildas, maybe it was some native with a twisted sense of humor.
Oh, Renee, we've got to get out of here.
Naturally, and it shouldn't be very difficult if we use our heads. Now, let's see. Why, of course. I have a hatchet over here in the drawer.
Oh, Renee.
Gone.
Renee, he took it. Whoever locked us in took it.
Now, don't get hysterical again. I can always fire my revolver. Maybe it might help that way.
Oh, then hurry, hurry.
See, the cartridges are over here in the other drawer. No.
Cartridges. They're gone, too.
Yes. They're gone, too.
Renee, the door. Somebody's there.
It's opening. Dr. Pazan.
Good morning, Monsieur Bremond.
And Eve, my dear wife. Aren't you happy to see your devoted husband again?
You locked us in, didn't you?
Yes, it was you.
Stand where you are, monsieur. I shall feel impelled to use my gun.
Dr. Pazan, what sort of comedy do you think you're playing?
A romantic one, but only as a supporting player. I'm sure you'll be the first to admit that.
Oh, no, Francois. It isn't true what you're thinking.
We can explain everything if you'll only give us a chance.
I'm sure it would be a most ingenious alibi.
You blind, stupid, jealous fool. I demand that you let us out of here at once.
Let you out? Oh, no. I couldn't do that. It would be criminal.
Criminal?
Decidedly, you are dangerous.
What riddles are you speaking now?
Not riddles, facts.
Oh, you've gone mad, completely mad.
No, my dear wife, I'm not mad, but unfortunately, it will soon be impossible to say the same about one of you.
What?
Which one? Me, perhaps. And then again, perhaps it is she. Who knows?
What are you talking about?
Tell us what you have to say and be done with it. Very well, Monsieur Raymond. Remember telling me that I ought to have killed my little dog? What about it? I have been forced to follow your advice, Monsieur. You see, the dog had become rabid.
Oh.
But what has that to do with us? Patience. Patience. What will interest you particularly is that last night, after I killed the poor dog, I filled my hypodermic needle with its saliva.
With its saliva?
Yes, its saliva, brimming with hydrophobia. And then I came back here. Came back all the way to the forest. I came back with my hypodermic needle.
That was really you. You that I saw leaning over my bed.
And then you injected the needle into me. You monster! You infected us both!
No, not both. Just one of you. Don't you remember my saying?
No, which one?
Which one did you infect?
It wasn't me.
Or me, in the name of heaven, man.
Very soon you'll find out. For very soon, the one who is infected will begin to feel symptoms. You're quite unmistakable, I assure you. First, just a general feeling of sickness, steadily growing worse.
And I'm the one. I woke up feeling ill.
And what about me? I thought it was malaria.
Next will come that awful, crucifying thirst. And then the final stage, the transformation into a snarling, frothing, howling beast that will bite and tear and stand back, Raymond, or I shoot.
Dr. Pezan, by all that is holy, I swear that we are innocent.
Oh, yes, Antoine, yes.
Have you no mercy?
I have only advice. There in the drawer, where you failed to find the hatchet, I left a knife.
A knife?
Oh, it's not sharp enough or strong enough to tear open the door or window bars. However, when the mad person attacks the healthy one, the knife will prove useful. Goodbye.
If we only knew. If we only knew which one of us it was.
Not me. He wouldn't have done it to me. He wants me. He wouldn't destroy me. It's you, and he did it to you.
You're just saying that, Eve. You know in your heart it isn't true. Suspicion has turned his love for you into inhuman hatred. You're the one he'd want to destroy, not me. It's you he's infected, you.
First, just a general feeling of sickness, steadily growing worse.
General feeling of sickness, steadily growing worse. What he said...
What's that you're saying, Eve?
Rene, there's no longer any doubt about it. It was me that he infected.
No. It was me. Just as he said, the symptoms are unmistakable. Why should I lie to myself or you any longer? I'm the victim.
You're sure, Rene? You're positive?
Good to God that I weren't. General feeling of sickness.
Next will come that awful crucifying thirst. That awful crucifying thirst.
Rene, where is the water?
Empty.
No!
That devil! He must have poured out all the water.
Poured out all the water? And I'm so thirsty. So horribly, terribly thirsty.
You are? Eve, you are? Then you must be the one.
Water. Water, get me water. I have water.
And then the final stage. The transformation into a snarling, frothing, growling beast.
Why do you stand there looking at me, Rene? Water! I've got to have water!
There's nothing I can do, Eve. Nothing!
You've got to do something!
There in the drawer where you failed to find the hatchet, I left a knife. When the mad person attacks the healthy one, the knife will prove useful.
Rene!
are you doing? That's wrong.
Why, I...
Put down that knife, Renee. Put it away. Put it away. You hear?
Eve, stay away from me. I warn you.
He's going to kill
me. Don't come a step closer.
Kill
if you do, I'll have to use this knife.
We're locked in here together, Eve, and there's nothing I can do but use this knife.
Help! Help!
Doctor, doctor, see, I come back. I come back.
Yes, Mallet, she'll come back.
Missus, where is she?
I think she is. The home was Monsieur Bremont, where you took her.
Monsieur Bremont? No, no, doctor. Mallet not take Missus anywhere. Mallet get scared of dogs, run away and leave Missus all alone in forest. Come back now to say very sorry.
Don't lie to me. You took her to Monsieur Bremont yesterday. Yesterday you had probably taken her many times before.
No, no.
Tell me, Mallard, how much did she pay you for keeping her secret?
Secret? What secret you talk about?
Don't taunt me about. You lied, devil.
Oh?
It won't do any good. I found her with Monsieur Bremont.
Who is Monsieur Bremont? Mallard, not know.
If you say that once more, I'll flog you.
Huh?
The game is up. I caught her with her lover and...
Mallard, not know what you talk. Yesterday, Mrs. say go with her to village. On way, dog come. Mallard, run. Leave Mrs. behind. Now, come back to say very sorry.
A very clever story, Mallard.
Oh, yeah.
And who knows?
Yeah.
I might have been fool enough to believe it, if not for this.
Oh, you get letter?
Yes, a letter. Last night, while visiting Monsieur Bremont's lodge, I found it in a drawer hidden under the box of cartridges. It's in her own handwriting.
Doctor, what letter say?
I couldn't bear to read what my wife wrote to her lover. I haven't read it. But I will now. I'll read it now.
This is very good to Marley. Very good to Marley. Doctor! What is it? Why you...
Renee, everything that once was between us is forgotten and must forever remain that way. Please, I beg you, never come to see me. And if ever we chance to meet, remember, I am Madame Plaisant, and not the girl who... Oh, dear God! What have I done?
Doctor, where you go?
Quick, Mallet, come! Maybe there is yet time! Let me out, for God's sake! Let me out of here! Yes, yes! Quick, Mallet! Help me get the door open.
Oh, Missus!
Dead. How did you expect to find her? So, you killed her?
Yes. I killed her. I was only your instrument. You gave her that monstrous disease.
Eve. Eve. Look at her now. Your wife. Your beautiful young wife. You and your hypodermic needle. You made her into a frothing, howling, biting...
Listen to me. It's true that her blood is on my soul. She was not a victim of hydrophobia.
What?
All that about that hypodermic needle. I made it up.
Neither you nor my wife was touched.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was The Thirsty Death, starring Bela Lugosi and John Carradine with Loreen Tuttle.
What's the matter, Ken? We didn't frighten you, did we?
Well, I'm afraid you did, Bela. That was pretty scary.
Oh, that was nothing.
Nothing?
No, wait till you hear next week's story. The Grand Guignol play about a woman who was buried alive. And my guest will be the beautiful and charming Simone Simon. Hope you and your audience will join me next week at Mystery House.
Bela Lugosi is currently being starred in a series of Mystery House pictures at Universal Studios. You'll find Mystery House novels on sale at your local bookstore. John Carradine will soon be seen in the title role of Bluebeard. This is Ken Carpenter.
Whoa! Scary, kid, scary. I mean, it really was scary, though, wasn't it, huh? Even the title was scary. The Thirsty Death. And that Bela Lugosi, wow. I mean, despite his vampire fierce image, I guess his story proves his bark is worse than his bite, huh? He's one cruel doctor. When he says I'll be seeing you, he means ceasing, as in 10 or 20 cc's of dog saliva.
Really?
But that's what's so scary, because even though he was bluffing, they both thought they had gotten his point.
Yes.
No, seriously, though, you might even say he was driving them mad with his needling. Oh, but what do you expect? After all, she did bite the hand that fed her. but at least he had the nerve to apologize once he discovered he was barking up the wrong tree. Which I guess, if anything, it all goes to show the old proverb that blood is thicker than water. And speaking of bloody doctors, I know another physician that you will want to avoid. He charges twice the normal rate, and he's anything but normal. He's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So scary!
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Every man is truly two beings, cursed with the struggle of good and evil within him. What would this duality be like? Separated, each part living alone, the good companion, and then the pure and ugly evil of a man.
That you, Poole?
Yes, Dr. Jekyll.
Come in. Did you get the salt?
Yes, sir. Finally, sir, but only 3 pounds of it. That was all the chemist had.
Good. It will suffice. Thank you, Poole.
Anything else, sir?
No, Poole. Good night.
I beg pardon, sir, if I may ask. Is the experiment nearly done?
I think so, Poole. This time, I think it's really nearly done.
Ah, oh, splendid, sir. Cook will be glad to hear it, too. Good night, sir.
Good night.
Yes, and a gram of salt. Now. Where's your courage, Jekyll? Drink it. Evil within you, growing before your eyes. There's breath in your other half, Jekyll. You've given him the miracle of life. The essence of the hidden evil in a man, Dr. Jekyll. The miracle of consummate evil come to life. The hidden soul of Jekyll. I am Mr. Hyde.
That night, like a shadow from an evil place,
A stooped figure walked alone in the London streets. About him was a feeling of deformity and decay. He had come from the by-street door of Dr. Henry Jekyll's house, from his laboratory. And it was this same door he entered again when the first light of dawn dispelled the night. But during the day, the house and the laboratory were quiet, while the master slept. That evening, Mr. Utterson, the lawyer, stood before the bright fire in the library. Dr. Jekyll had sent for him.
This will is preposterous, Jekyll. I'm your lawyer,
well,
yes,
there's
but...
nothing to be so concerned about, Utterson. Edward Hyde is a new friend of mine. I want to be sure he's provided for in case something happens to me, that's all.
But nothing's going to happen to you. How could you just disappear, as you've stated in this testament?
Well, now, how could I know that, Utterson?
Well, it's strange, Jekyll, but if this is the way you want it...
Hyde has captured my interest, Utterson. His well-being is the one thing uppermost in my mind. I want to be certain, in case something does happen to me, that Hyde will be financially secure to carry on.
I see. Well, all right, Jekyll, as you wish. The will will be ready for your signature in a few days. I'll bring it around myself.
Splendid, Utterson. Now, what about that spot of wine?
Thanks, no. Dr. Lanyon's expecting me.
Lanyon, huh?
He was only asking about you the other evening, Jekyll. We see you so seldom these days.
Well, I've been rather hard at it in the laboratory. Sure, you can't stay.
Another time. Good night, Jekyll.
Good night. Wonder who the devil this Edward Hyde is. Mr. Utterson was the first of many Londoners who were to wonder about the hideous specter-like Mr. Hyde, who were to fear the shadows of night because of him. One evening, nearly a week later...
Here, young fellow. What's the matter?
He's a monster, sir. He struck me with his cane. Help me, sir, please.
There. Nobody's going to hurt you. Now, where is this monster you speak of?
He was right behind me, sir. All the way from Clement Street. Look, there, under the corner light. You'll not let him come at me again, will you, sir? Will you?
No, my lad. No harm will come to you.
Oh, sir.
He's seen us now. Wait. By George, it is a monster.
Look, sir, he's making for that doorway. The small one in the shadow, just there.
So he is. Hey, here, fellow. Wait a minute there. Come along, my lad.
But, sir, don't let him.
It's all right now. Don't be afraid. You there. Did you strike this child?
If the ruffian molests me again, I'll strike him again.
What kind of a devil are you?
There's no gentleman that wishes to avoid a scene. It was an accident. Maybe this pound note will ease the boy's pain.
Oh, no.
Take it, lad.
Now, if you'll excuse me.
Wait a moment. In this door, isn't this Jekyll's laboratory? You must be Mr. Hyde. I'm an old friend of the doctor's, Utterson of Gaunt Street. You must have heard of me. I was just on my way to see Jekyll.
How did you know I'm Mr. Hyde?
Oh, we have common friends.
Who are they?
Jekyll, for one. Come. Let me see your face, Mr. Hyde. How else shall I know you when we meet again?
We shall not meet again, Mr. Utterson.
Well, so that is Hyde. Now, my lad, run along. I've got a call to make.
In this house, sir?
Yes, but at the front door. I want to see if Mr. Jekyll's in. Now, my lad, you run along home, and don't let me catch you out on the dark streets like this again.
Yes, sir, you won't, sir. Thank you.
Good evening, Poole.
Good evening, Mr. Utterson.
Dr. Jekyll home, Poole?
I'm afraid not, sir.
Thought you would be here at this late hour.
And most gently he is, sir.
I just saw that Hyde fellow go in by the laboratory door. Is that right, when Dr. Jekyll's away from home?
Quite right, Mr. Utterson. Mr. Hyde has a key.
Your master seems to put a great deal of trust in him.
Yes, sir, he does indeed. We all have orders to obey him, though we see him seldom. He mostly comes and goes by the street door and at night, sir.
Well... Tell Dr. Jekyll I'd like to see him as soon as possible and give him these papers, would you, Poole?
Yes.
I was talking with him about them a few days ago.
Yes, sir.
Good night, Poole.
Good night, Mr. Utterson. Now, the sword, Mr. Hyde. Hurry. mix it well. Pour the powder in slowly. Now, drink it. Now. Look, the strength of good, Mr. Hyde. The triumphant strength of good. Watch your face. The terror of your eyes unclouding. And straightening of your crooked, evil soul. The masking of an ugly idol in the glass. It's the last of you, Mr. Hyde. You'll never exist again.
What? Is that you, Dr. Jekyll?
Yes, Poole.
Well, I'm so sorry, sir. I only just told Mr. Utterson that you were not at home.
I came in by the laboratory door, Poole.
But Mr. Hyde, sir...
Mr. Hyde is gone.
Oh, I see. Mr. Utterson left this paper envelope, sir. He asked also to see you as soon as possible.
Well, thank you, Poole. Put it there.
Shall I bring you some chocolate, sir?
No. No, I'll go to bed. I'm very tired, Poole. I've been alone too much lately. What do you say to my taking your advice and having that dinner party?
Oh, that would be like old times, sir.
And we'll talk it over tomorrow.
Splendid, sir.
And, Poole, I don't think Mr. Hyde will be back again.
Good evening. Come right in, sir.
Dr. Lanyon and Miss Julie, come in.
Hello, Jekyll. Good to see you out of that shell after all these months. This isn't going to be one of those stuffy dinner parties, is it?
Pay no attention to him, Dr. Jekyll.
Your hat and coat, Dr. Lanyon.
Oh, yes, Poole. By the way, Jekyll.
Yes.
This is your walking stick, isn't it?
Why, so it is.
You went off with mine the last time you were over and left yours.
Did I? I am sorry. Look for Dr. Lanyon's cane, will you, Poole?
Yes, sir.
Of course, I'd rather have this one. I'm fond of canes in sherry. A little dog's head is nicely carved.
Well, perhaps we'll arrange a swap someday.
Well, Dr. Jekyll, good evening.
Good, Sir Andrew. Hello there.
Where have you been hiding all these weeks?
Hiding? Oh, right here, Sir Andrew, right here.
Well, we've missed you. Mrs. Fielding's dinners aren't the same without Dr. Jekyll.
Well, thank
I
you,
must
sir.
Say it's good to see you, Jekyll.
Utterson,
you're
hello.
Not evading me this time. Been trying to see you all week.
Why, something on your mind?
Not here, old fellow. Come along. We can steal out a few minutes before dinner.
But only a few. I've got a house full of guests, remember. Look, there's nobody here in the laboratory. Down, by the fire.
My word, it does look like you've been working.
Well, it takes a lot of equipment for chemical experiments. Now, what's up?
You should know without asking. That will, of course.
Oh, that.
I don't like it, Jekyll.
You never did.
And especially since I've met your Mr. Hyde. He's a frightful fellow, Jekyll. The other night...
Let's not talk about it, Utterson. It's not as you fancy. I can be rid of Hyde... The moment I choose.
What's the matter?
I was just going to say, let's leave the will as it is. And will you promise me one thing?
What's that?
I still take a great interest in Hyde, and I only ask for justice for you to help him if the time comes when I'm no longer here.
Oh, the whole thing's preposterous, but... And it's a promise. No. I'll do my best. Oh. Well, look here, Jekyll. Are you ill?
No,
but your face, man. Your face.
Don't look at me, Utterson.
Jekyll, wait a minute.
He saw you, Mr. Hyde. My eyes. Let me alone. Let me alone. You've got to die and stay dead forever. You're afraid, Mr. Hyde. Afraid of him. Can you kill the strongest force in the world? You've got to have the strength of Hyde to murder. The inordinate strength of Hyde. You can't kill me, Jekyll. The good in you can never kill. And I shall never die. Not as long as you can live.
Thank you.
That hideous creature we heard about, ma'am, that Mr. Heidi. I just saw him kill a man.
Kill a man?
Where? In the street, just outside. I screamed and he looked up at me like a wild man he was. Oh, no, no, don't go out there, Miss Julie.
Anna, get yourself in hand.
Julie, what's going on here?
Something on the street, Father. You better go out and see what's happened.
Oh, the creature was about to come up to the balcony, Dr. Lanyon. It was stooped and hideous and...
Put her on the bed, Julie. I'll be right back.
I've just been sitting here peaceful-like watching the moonlight ever since you and Dr. Lanyon came back from Dr. Jekyll's party. Then the white-haired gentleman came along and this monster...
Oh, it's all right, Anna.
And the white-haired gentleman just asked about the post, and this monster struck him with his cane, oh, and then kicked him and kicked
Anna,
him. It was that hide monster, Miss Julie.
Oh, but where'd he go?
Well, when I screamed, some people came out from the houses, and he looked round like an animal and then ran away. Oh, he might come back, Miss Julia. Don't let him come back. Don't let him come back.
Here, get back there. What's happened?
Yeah, the poor blighter, such an old man. He's been murdered, Dr. Lanyon.
Good Lord. It's Sir Andrew Carew.
Looks like he was on his way to the post and some madman attacked him.
Here, you. Call an officer.
Already been called. Look at this.
What is it?
A walking cane. What the murder was done with, most likely. It broke plumb in two.
Here, let me see that.
Heavy sort of cane. Easy to do a murder with that.
How terrible. Some maniac's done this.
That Mr. Hyde we've heard so much about, and some folks have seen. That's who's done it.
Mr. Hyde.
Cherry cane with a dog's head carved in the handle.
Why, this is Dr. Jekyll's.
Ah. Clark, let me have a room. Any room, quick.
Yes, sir, right away. Sir.
And I want a note delivered immediately.
Will you register, sir?
There's no time, I tell you. Give me a room and send me a messenger, quick.
But, sir,
do you want these fingers around your throat, or will you do as I say?
Yes, sir. Sam, show this gentleman up to 210 and wait for a note he wants delivered.
Oh, my word, fingers around my throat. And by golly, I really meant it.
I cannot impress upon you too strongly the importance of this note, Dr. Lanyon. You have been a dear friend, and now my life is in your hands. Go immediately to my house. Poole will admit you. From my laboratory cabinet, remove the fourth drawer from the top with all its contents intact, and take it to your house, where a man will present himself in my name at exactly midnight tonight. You must not fail me. Henry Jekyll. What an extraordinary thing. Well, I've done as Jekyll said. Now we'll see. Oh, right on the dot. Who's there?
That's Willie Egg.
Are you from Jekyll?
Yeah, that's Willie Egg.
Lanyon, you got... I have, but... But look here.
I don't always stop. I have the drawer.
It's in my study, through that door there.
Where is it?
There, on the table.
Have you got a graduated glass?
It's on the shelf beside you, but what are you going to do?
I am going to perform a miracle.
Now look here. Jekyll didn't say anything about... If this is some fiendish thing Jekyll's cooked up, I'll be no partner to it.
Crystals.
Who are you anyway?
Look at you, Dr. Lanyon.
Man, answer me. Who are you?
You've already guessed that, haven't you? I am Mr. Hyde.
Hyde?
Is your curiosity great enough to watch me drink this potion?
What are you talking about? Get out of here, you devil!
If you watch me, a new knowledge will be open to you, Dr. Lanyon. And in this room, this instant... Your sight will be blasted by a prodigy that would stagger the unbelief of Staker and himself.
You're a madman. Yeah. Get out of my house.
Now, watch, Dr. Lanyon, watch.
Jekyll. Jekyll.
In heaven's name.
It's you. The birth of a good man before your eyes. Now you see why I hid myself away all those weeks, Dr. Lanyon.
Jekyll, what are you saying?
At first it took a strong draught of the formula to bring him to life. Weeks ago that was. But now he's too strong. Now the Jekyll you see before you hasn't the power to keep him back. 2 hours from now, Dr. Lanyon, I'll be Mr. Hyde again. And no strength of my will can stop it.
Jekyll, you're mad. Leave me alone.
Alone. More of the powder, Dr. Lanyon. In heaven's name, don't you see? I've got to find more of the powder. This was the last of it.
Jekyll, have mercy. Let an old man alone.
Together we can do it, Dr. Lanyon. Poole got the powder for me, but the shop where he got it has no more. It must have contained some impurity that did the trick. You've got to help me find out what that impurity was. Dr. Lanyon, you've got to help me murder this evil Hyde in my soul.
Jekyll, stop. Why? Stop.
Dr. Lanyon. Dr. Lanyon! No!
His heart cannot stand the wonder of your miracle, Dr. Jekyll. You have killed him. The one man who could save your life is dead.
Oh, God bless you, Mr. Addison, for coming so quickly.
Oh, what on earth's happened, Poole?
I'm sorely afraid Dr. Jekyll's been murdered, sir.
What? Murdered?
Come with me, sir. Don't make a noise. We mustn't be heard.
But where are you taking me?
Here's a candle, sir. To Dr. Jekyll's laboratory. And if by any chance he asks you in, don't go, Mr. Addison. Don't go.
But how could Jekyll be dead?
Quiet, sir, I beg of you. You see, he's been in the laboratory all day, and he won't come out. And every time I knock, wait, and you shall see. Here's the door.
What is it?
Mr. Addison, sir, asking to see you.
Tell him McCroskey, everybody.
Yes, sir.
No, but Poole, that isn't... Well, that doesn't sound like Jekyll to me.
No, sir, I'm glad to hear you say so, because Mr. Addison, whatever is in there, cries to heaven for help and wails and sobs.
What are you driving at, Poole?
Well, sir, it all began early this morning after they'd found Dr. Lanyon dead.
Yes, yes, I saw him. Such terror in his face.
Well, sir, it was sometimes Dr. Jekyll's way to leave orders on a sheet of paper outside this door. And since early this morning, sir, we've had nothing else except notes and a closed door and food left outside to be smuggled in when nobody was looking. And a dozen times, Mr. Anderson, those notes were sent me flying all over London to wholesale chemists for a certain powder. But every time, soon after I brought it back, there'd be another paper telling me to return it because it wasn't right, sir. And this drug, sir, is wanted very badly.
Then maybe it is Jekyll, Poole. Maybe...
Oh, sir, do you think I wouldn't know my master after 20 years? That thing in there, Mr. Addison, had done away with Dr. Jekyll.
Then who do you think it is in there?
I give you my Bible word, Mr. Addison. It's that monster, Mr. Hyde.
That's what I thought. Come on, we've got to break in.
Yes, sir.
We need an axe, something to pry the door with.
Well, I have the tools here. I've also taken the liberty of sending a footman with a boy around by the by-street entrance, just in case. And I have a gun here.
Good. But can they catch him if he tries to escape?
They can, sir. Here's the axe.
Here. Here, hold the candle. I'm going to knock first.
Right.
Mr. Hyde, will you let me in?
I can't see anybody. Go away.
If you don't open the door, I'm going to break it down.
Addison, in heaven's name, have mercy. Leave me alone.
Poole, stand back.
If you value your life, stay away.
We're coming in there, Mr. Hyde.
No! If you break down the door, I'll kill you. Do you hear me? I'll kill you. No. Miss Anderson, wait. I'll unlock the door.
Give me that gun, Poole.
The door's unlocked. Open it and come in if you dare.
Stand behind me, Poole. Yes. I'm going to push it open.
Oh, it's the monster. Mr. Addison has got a knife.
Stay back from us, Mr. Hyde.
Here, you
see, evil incarnate, Mr. Utterson. And murder is my forte.
So you have murdered Dr. Jekyll?
Because he wished me dead. Now both of you shall die.
He's coming at us, sir.
Stay back, Mr. Hyde.
Robinson, look out.
Now.
Is he dead, sir?
He's dead, Paul.
Then we must find Dr. Jekyll.
His body must be here somewhere in the laboratory.
Wait. Look.
His face. It's changing, sir. It's...
You're looking at the shell of an evil soul, Poole. Dissolving. Turning back to the form of its creator.
But it's Dr. Jekyll. What does it mean, Mr. Utterson?
It means the evil man is Deadpool. For here lies the better half of his duality. Triumphant.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you the story, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
Ooh, scary, 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 wasn't it, kids, huh? I don't mind telling you that Dr. Jekyll was certainly hideous, huh? But seriously, no, the entire time I kept wanting to say, physician, heal thyself, huh? Oh, but I guess it all goes to show that doctors are the worst patients. I mean, I've heard the vicious stereotypes, but really... Yes, yes. That's one double entendre whose double meaning is double mean, huh? Yes, yes. But if this advice, Hyde had it. No, really. He was dishonest, he was untrustworthy, and two-faced. Oh, boy. I mean, talk about the alter ego that needs altering. Man, he had it. Of course, he didn't always lie. Sometimes he just held back the truth. Like, when he told his servant he was going to turn in, he didn't say into what, huh? but now we must turn to suspense. For more suspense with the man who couldn't lose on Mystery Playhouse. So scary!
Suspense. Produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. This is the third in a special limited series of five Friday night performances of Suspense at this hour. Suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are stories calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation, and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. Tonight from Hollywood, we bring you Mr. Dan Duryea as star in The Man Who Couldn't Lose, a radio play by Emil C. Tepperman. We trust that with this tale, we shall once again keep you in suspense.
You feeling all right now?
Sure. Sure, I feel swell.
You better not talk anymore, though.
Why not? I got nothing to worry about. That's what I'm telling you. Something's happened to me. I'm not scared. It's just like old man Mosley said. It doesn't happen often. But when it does, well, it's happened to me. Something's happened to me that doesn't happen once in 100 years. And it all happened in one day. Yeah, it began this morning.
Leonard! Leonard! Now, don't you try to kid me. You're not asleep.
Get up.
Sure. Okay.
I cook your breakfast. I come home and cook your dinner. In between, I work behind that counter all day until I'm so tired I can't hardly stand up. The least you can do is get up and drive me to work.
Sure, I will.
And what do you do? Nothing.
Now listen, Celia.
You don't call what you do work, I hope. When did you last sell an insurance policy? When? I'll bet you can't even remember. I'm sure I can't.
All right.
And when you do get up enough energy to sell one once in a while, I never see the money, horses, sweepstakes tickets, the numbers, anything, just so long as you gamble it away. But do you ever bring a dollar home? Not that I ever hear anything about.
Oh, shut up.
Don't you tell me to shut up, Leonard Snell. I pay the rent when it gets paid. I pay the grocery bills. I pay for everything. You'd think at least I get a little appreciation once in a while.
I appreciate it. I hear about it enough.
Well, then why don't you do something about it?
Listen, Celia, I don't feel so good today.
Sure. That's what you always say every time anybody talks about work. But I'm sick and tired of it. You promised you were going to get a job this week, and you're going to do it.
Celia? There's something I gotta tell you.
Oh, I suppose you want to wheedle some money out of me again. Well, if you can't even keep a little lunch money in your pocket,
No, listen, it's more than that.
Oh, it is it? I suppose you got another hot tip on the races. Well, if you think I'm going
to... Will you shut up?
Hey, what's the matter with you?
Listen, Celia. I've sold quite a few insurance policies in the last 6 months.
Oh, you have you? Well, where's the money? Don't you try to pull that on me. You're going to get a job.
All right. I spent the money.
On the races.
Yeah. Only it wasn't all my money.
What do you mean?
I mean I'm $1,800 short. And this is the last day to settle up my accounts with the company.
You stole it.
I thought I was going to get it back and make a killing. I had some tips that were supposed to be sure things.
Oh, I get it. $1,800. Quite a coincidence, isn't it?
All right. $1,750. What's the difference?
And it just so happens that I have $1,800 in a safe deposit box that Aunt May left me this spring. Quite a coincidence.
Celia, I gotta get that money back to him today.
Well, I don't believe a word of it. And you're not gonna get that money.
If I don't, they can send me to jail.
And if I did believe you, you wouldn't get it. Maybe a few months in jail would teach you a little consideration. You know I gotta have an operation sometime this fall. You think I want to go into a charity ward? And who'd pay the rent while I was sick?
They can give me 5 years.
You're just a little too cute, Mrs. Snell. You've had your eye on that money ever since you heard I got it. But you're not gonna get it. Why do you think I wear the key to that safe deposit box around my neck?
Celia?
I suppose you think I haven't noticed.
Now look, Celia, look.
I suppose you think I don't know all those times you tried to get that chain off my neck when you thought I was asleep.
Yeah, but...
Well, I wasn't quite as sleepy as you thought, mister.
All right, Celia.
And don't you think you can wheedle it out of me? Get away from me. Len! Pick up!
I knew I'd have to do that to you someday. I bent over. She was dead, all right. The key was on that little chain around her neck, just like it had always been. I yanked on the chain, snapped, and the key came away in my hand. I shaved, got dressed, then I went through a purse. There was $9 and some change in the usual junk, and that's sweepstake ticket made out in the name of I'm a Winner. I put the money in my pocket and the ticket in my wallet. I'm all set to go now except for writing the letter. All of a sudden, I realize what I'm doing doesn't seem strange to me at all. It's like one of those dreams where you think it's all happened before sometime. I wrote to the police. I have killed my wife in a fit of anger. I can't go on living anymore after doing a thing like that to Celia. I'm short in my account, too. So there's only one thing for me to do. Don't bother looking for me. By the time you get this letter, you can find me in the city morgue. Yours truly, Leonard Snell.
Hey, Leonard. Oh, Leonard.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Morsley.
Leonard, I've just had some great news. I knew you'd want to hear about it right away.
Well, I'm in sort of a hurry this morning.
All right, but wait till you hear this. You know that picric acid dye formula I've been working on?
Yeah?
Well, the government's just bought an option on it. They're going to try it out under factory conditions, and when they do, why, my boy, it'll be worth $1 million.
Well, what do you know? That's really great. Well, I guess I'd better be going along.
So I decided to take out that annuity you've been trying to sell me. Got an application with you, have you?
Oh. Yeah. Sure.
Go on inside.
Hello there, Leonard.
Good morning.
Why, my land, you look as though you've just seen a ghost.
He just sold a policy. You don't sell them like that every day, do you, my boy? What's that first premium? About $3,400, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there's a nice commission in that, eh, Leonard? About, $1,800, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. 18.
Well, Leonard certainly deserves it. He works very hard. I see him coming home every evening with that briefcase and all those papers under his arm.
Oh, I'm sure he works hard, but perhaps I'm a little more observant than you, dear. Oh, sit right down there, my boy.
Okay.
Oh, watch out for those bottles behind you, though. That's picric acid.
What do you mean? You're more observant than I am.
Most of those papers are the racing forms, aren't they, Leonard?
Well,
You know, I've been watching you, Leonard. Yes, you've had a hard time, but you're a gambler. You believe a lot in luck. Well, sir, now I've got a theory about luck.
When were you born?
March 1st, 1878. Yes, luck is something that can come in big doses sometimes. It's almost as though fate had planned it out ahead of time.
Who's the beneficiary?
My wife.
Oh, that's so good.
Well, there's a perfectly good mathematical explanation for it, of course. Now, a number of unrelated events converge, and they all add up to the good fortune of a single man. Oh, happens once in a century, perhaps, but it does happen.
You can make out the check.
Of course. Why don't I make it out to you personally? Then I can collect that 3 months' rent you owe me, huh?
Why, sure. Yeah. Sure. That'd be,
$3,255. Hey, fine. I'll make it up, right?
You know, Leonard, I was saying to Sam just this morning, I'm almost as glad for your sake as for ours. My won't Celia be surprised.
Huh?
I said, won't Celia be surprised?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Say, where is Celia? She usually leaves work long before this. I always hear her.
Well, she's,
Leonard, don't tell me there's anything wrong. I know she hasn't been feeling well.
No. It's just a little headache, you know.
Why, the poor thing. Why didn't you tell me? I'll go right upstairs and fix her something.
No. No, you better not. She told me she wanted to sleep. She's asleep now.
Oh. Well, then I won't bother her.
Yeah.
I'll go up around noontime. Maybe I can fix her a little something then.
Well, yeah, sure.
My boy. Here's your check.
Thanks.
Now, don't play that on the races.
Don't worry.
But you keep playing your luck just the same. Now, luck's a funny thing. You had a lucky start today. Maybe your luck's changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it has.
Why couldn't he have signed it yesterday? That's all I could think of for a couple of minutes. Why couldn't he have signed it yesterday? But it was done now. I get in the car and drive downtown. First, I go to Celia's bank, and I get that $1,800 out of the deposit box. Nobody says a word. Then I drive over to Morsley's bank and cash the check. I've got over $5,000 now. That's pretty good for a guy that started out the day by being $1,750 in the hole. I drive over towards the park. A clock in a jewelry store says 10:15. 10:15. That was plenty of time. At the park, I stop and give the once over to the bum sitting around on the benches in the sun. There's always a bunch of them there. Pretty soon, I see a guy that looks about right. Hey, you.
Me?
Yeah. You want to make $5?
You mean the job?
You won't have to strain yourself. I just hurt my wrist and I can't drive. I gotta go uptown and meet a guy. You wanna drive me?
Oh, okay.
You got a license?
Yeah, I got a license.
Let's see it.
Okay, yeah.
Floyd Houston. Omaha, Nebraska. You're kind of a long ways from home, aren't you?
Yeah, but it's okay to drive with an estate if you got a licensed driver with you.
Okay, Floyd Eustace. You'll do.
We get in the car and head uptown. My luck is holding. This guy couldn't have been better if I looked a week. I see another clock, and it's only a little past 10:30 now. I still got lots of time, so I decide to clean up the details now.
How am I doing?
Okay. But turn right at the next block, Floyd. I want to go by the 43rd Street post office and mail a letter.
Sure. Hey, you could mail it at a letterbox, though.
Yeah, but I don't want to mail it at a letterbox.
Oh. Okay.
I go into the post office and get a stamp, mail a letter. It's a letter where I tell about killing Celia. And it's just addressed to Police Commissioner, 21 Center Street. Somehow, I just don't trust a letterbox. Because if the police don't get that letter right on time and start looking, it's not so good. I go out and get in the car, and I tell Floyd Eustace where to go.
We head uptown.
After a while, we get to Fort Tryon Park, right above Riverside Drive, looking over the river. There's hardly ever anybody up there at this time of year, so I felt pretty safe. And sure enough, there wasn't.
I got the monkey wrench out, and I had it in my hand.
This right?
Yeah. Just pull over there, up against the rail.
Gee. I never been up here. Must be quite a drop down there, huh? A couple of hundred feet, huh?
Uh-huh.
This where you're supposed to meet the guy?
Yeah.
Right
here.
I dragged him into the back seat and took off all his clothes, and then all mine. I changed clothes with him right down to the underwear and socks. I put all my papers in his pockets. My license, old man Morsley's application, my wallet, the works. Then I dragged him up front again in the driver's seat. I propped him there with his arms through the wheel so his head would go through the windshield. I had to be sure they'd say it was me, nobody else. Then I put her in gear and let her go.
Stand back.
Hey, officer, didn't they want 3 feet from me? Right by me, not
my
3 feet.
Oh, this car just rolled off the Palisades up there somehow and landed smack in the middle of the street.
Hey, look at his face. He must have gone right through the windshield.
Yeah, poor fella. Identified him from his wallet, a guy named Snell. Leonard Snell.
I was free. I was free of Celia and all her bellyache. I was free to do anything I wanted. I had $5,000 in my pocket, and the cops had Leonard Snell's body down at the morgue, just like I told them they would in the letter. My luck was holding but good. I went over to the 181st Street bus station. There was a bus leaving for Boston in 20 minutes. I bought a ticket. Then I got a paper on the corner, went into the lunchroom, and sat down at the counter.
What's yours?
Scrambled eggs with bacon. French fries. Orange juice and coffee. And I gotta catch a bus. It won't take long, will it?
No longer than it takes an egg to scramble.
Whoop. Excuse me.
That's all right, Mac. I like to read the newspaper while I eat myself.
Uh-huh.
Kind of aids the digestion, I find.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here's your orange juice.
Thanks.
Some guys have all the luck, don't they?
Huh?
I said some guys have all the luck. I was just noticing in the paper there about those Irish sweepstick winners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some guys...
What's the matter? You feel bad?
Have all the luck. When I came to, somebody was swabbing my head with water. I pay my check and get out of there somehow. And I look at the paper again. That's what it said, all right. I'm a winner, draws favorite in Irish sweeps. My ticket. And it went on to say how it was worth at least $40,000. Maybe $150,000 if the horse won. And all of a sudden, I was standing there and cursing and swearing at Celia, right out loud, just as though she was alive. Till I see some people are staring at me, and I stop. Because if it hadn't been for her, I'd have $40,000. $40,000! And now that $40,000 was just a one-way ticket to the hot seat. Because that $40,000 belonged to Leonard Snell. and that Irish Fleet ticket was in Leonard Snell's wallet. And Leonard Snell's wallet was in the pocket of that bum that was supposed to be me. By now, the cops would have it along with the rest of Leonard Snell's stuff down at headquarters after they'd put the body in the morgue. If you've ever kissed off $40,000, you know how I felt. But what was the use? Well, I still have my $5,000 and a bus ticket to Boston. You can't get all the breaks all the time, was what I figured then. So I got on the bus.
Plenty seats in the rear.
This seat taken?
Oh, not at all. Sit right down.
Thanks.
Wow, wow. Somebody must be feeling pretty good this afternoon.
Huh?
The guy that's got the I'm a winner ticket in the sweeps. I see it says there they'd pay him $40,000 for it right now. $40,000?
Yeah.
I'd sure like to be in his shoes, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I see it says
here. You want to read it?
Well, you don't need to get sore.
Skip it. Holy...
Board. All aboard.
Hey, stop. Let me out of here. I gotta get out of here.
Well, make up your mind.
I don't have to make up my mind, brother. I don't have to make up my mind. It was right then I got the idea of what was happening. It was just like old man Morsley said. It may only happen once in 100 years, but it was happening to me. My luck was riding high. And when your luck is like that, you just can't lose. Because there it was, right in the paper again, on page 3. Freak explosion in Brooklyn kills 3. And it was my house. And the people killed were Morsley and his wife. And Celia. They thought it was caused by old Morsley's chemicals or something. I don't know, and I didn't care. All I knew was they thought Celia had been killed by the explosion and the fire, and I was in the clear. I could walk into the police station and get my sweepstakes ticket. You collect that $40,000, it'd be set for life. I knew just what I was going to tell them. It was a lead pipe cinch. I was walking on air all the way to the police station, and I was going up the steps. And then I stopped. Because I just remembered something terrible. And if I'd remembered it 10 seconds later, I'd have walked right into the electric chair. I remembered the letter. I was licked. By morning, the cops would have that letter in my own handwriting, over my own signature, telling how I'd kill Celia. That letter that I'd taken all the trouble to mail at the 43rd Street Post Office so it'd be sure to get off all right. I felt even worse this time than I had before, because it seemed like I'd almost had that money right in my hands. I was pretty shaky. I went into a bar to get a drink.
Yes, sir, what'll it be?
Double shot.
All right, sir. A little chaser on the side?
No.
That'll be a dollar.
Leave the bottle.
Yes, sir.
And now we bring you 5 minutes of the latest news.
Hey, Charlie, turn that radio off, will you?
One of the most daring holdups in the annals of New York crime, a gang of armed men this noon robbed a United States mail truck just as it was leaving the 43rd Street Post Office, removing 8 sacks of mail, the entire morning collection of the post office. Apparently, the gunmen were after a shipment of currency destined for the Federal Reserve Bank. But according to officials, the joke is on the gangsters.
Boy.
All they got something was the regular mail.
Hey, you didn't pay me. Yeah.
Staged in broad daylight.
Wait, you got change. Keep it. Keep the change.
Several of whom made a big...
I knew it had happened now. I couldn't lose. I simply couldn't lose. Because those mugs that stuck up that mail truck had got my letter. Nothing in the world could stop me now. Officer, I've just been held up.
Held up, huh?
Yeah.
Well, what happened?
Well, I picked up a guy who asked me for a lift about 225th Street and Broadway. I was driving along by Van Cortlandt Park when suddenly he grabbed me. Then he hit me with something. That's all I remember till I woke up lying in the park. My car was gone. Then I found out that he'd taken my wallet, my money. Everything.
I see. What's your name?
Leonard Snell.
Leonard Snell?
That's right.
Oh, say, Lieutenant.
Yeah?
This gentleman is Mr. Leonard Snell. He was held up this morning. His car was stolen.
Oh. Just step in here, will you, Mr. Snell?
Why, sure.
Sit down.
Thanks.
I've got some news for you, Mr. Snell.
Did you find my car?
Well, yes. fella didn't get far. He drove off the cliff at Fort Tryon Park. He's dead. For a while, we thought it was you. But that wasn't what I was going to tell you.
Well, what was it?
You haven't seen the papers today?
Not since this morning. What?
I've got some good news and some bad news for you, Mr. Snell. Maybe I better tell you the bad news first. It's pretty bad.
Go ahead.
Your wife was killed this morning, Mr. Snell, in a fire at your home.
My wife? Killed? Celia.
And this probably won't interest you much under the circumstances, Mr. Snell, but you've drawn a ticket worth $40,000 in the Irish sweepstakes.
Celia.
Well, to win the Irish sweepstakes and then lose your wife the same day. Some people sure have all the hard luck in the world.
Luck. Within about 15 minutes, more things were happening to me that could happen to most guys in a dozen lifetimes. And then comes the jackpot I've been waiting for.
Will you hold it, Mr. Snell? Just hold that pose right there.
If you care to make a statement,
one more now.
Would you mind telling the public how you feel?
Please, fellas. Please.
I hate to trouble you at this time, Mr. Snell, but the syndicate I represent is prepared to offer you $40,000 in cash for your sweepstake ticket. I've got the money right here in cash.
All right. I don't care much about the money, though. Now. That was at 4:30. By 6, I've got $45,000 in my pocket. Cash. And I'm registered at the Waldorf. And I'm sitting down to dinner. I'll take the plank steak, please. Medium.
Yes, sir. I will have your order very shortly, sir.
Hello, pal. Mind if I sit down?
You a reporter?
Not exactly. I'm a sort of a collector. You owe me 40 grand, pal. I come to collect. Now.
40? Well, I don't know.
Yes, you do, pal. Remember that little letter you wrote to the police commissioner this morning? That you mailed at the 43rd Street post office? Some friends of mine found it. They figure it's worth just about 40 grand.
You're one of the guys that stuck up the mail truck.
You want to make something of it? There's a big reward. There's a cop right outside the hotel. I kind of figured you'd play ball.
Where's the letter?
My friend's got it right outside in the car. Still got that dough on you in cash like the paper said?
Yes.
Come on.
All right.
You're a pretty lucky guy at that, pal. Suppose somebody else had got that letter.
Shh.
Don't worry, pal. Your secret is safe with me. Here's the card.
Let the guy pick it.
Yeah. He's acting real reasonable, too. Hey, get up the cash, pal.
You recognize the letter, don't you?
Here's your money.
And here's your letter. Only don't try anything funny because we still know what that letter says. And the cops could always dig up the body and find out how your old lady really kicked off. Couldn't they?
I think he gets the idea. So long, pal. So long.
Officer! Officer, those are the gangsters that held up the mail truck. I saw them this afternoon.
Hey, you! Oh. You go call an ambulance. I'll stand by this man.
Okay.
Hey, what's up, Jerry?
No.
We just had a little shooting match with those mail robbers.
No.
The other boys got him down the street. This poor man was shot when he fired back.
Yeah? What's this letter here?
No, please.
To the police commissioner.
No, please.
This fellow that shot at it before he fell. Hey, you'd better open it. Might be evidence.
No.
You better put a guard on this fellow at the hospital, Jerry.
Right, sir.
From the look of this letter, he's going to stand trial for murder.
You'd better not talk anymore, Mr. Snell.
What's the difference? What's the difference how much I talk? That's what I wanted to tell him. What if they did get the letter? I'll never go to trial. Because I got luck, don't you see? It comes once in 100 years. And I got it. I got that kind of luck. And when you got that kind of luck, you can't lose. You can't lose. You can't lose.
Oh. Hello.
Hello.
You still here?
Oh, you know, I gotta guard that fella Snell as long as he's here in the hospital. Yeah, but did you ever see the like of it? I don't suppose one man ever had so much luck in one day in the whole wide world. I guess his luck is played out now, all right, though.
Funny. He said you can't lose.
Yeah, well, he's wrong. He's wrong there, because that lad's gonna fry just as sure as my name is Jerry Maloney.
No, you're wrong, Jerry. Luck is still good.
Huh?
He's dead.
Suspense. Produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight you heard Mr. Dan Duryea as star of The Man Who Couldn't Lose. This was the third in a limited series of 5 Friday night performances at this hour, which will present radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Dan Duryea will soon be seen in Black Bart, a Universal International picture. Appearing with Mr. Duryea were Lucille Meredith, Kathy Lewis, Jeanette Nolan, John McIntyre, Elliot Lewis, Joseph Kearns, Jerry Hausner, Frank Albertson, Jack Crucian, Dick Ryan, Hans Conried, Ed Max, Frank Goss, and Jack Webb. Music for Suspense is under the direction of Lud Gluskin, with original music composed by Lucian Morawek.
Next Friday, same time, Boris Karloff will be our star in a famous story by John Collier. Don't forget, next Friday, same time, listen to Suspense.
Whoa, Kate.
Wasn't that scary, huh? Wasn't it? I mean, the irony of it all. He went through all that trouble for nothing. The waiting, the hardship, the emotional strangle. Struggle.
No, really. I mean, someone should have told that guy there's a difference between being loved dearly and being dearly beloved, huh? Yes, that's what she said, really. But she was touched. No, really. Firmly around the neck, she was touched. Yes, yes. You might even say her husband was a necromaniac, huh? There's one way you can always tell, too, when they're continually confusing esophagus with sarcophagus. I wonder if she knew that before she was lynched. Hitched, that is. That he intended to tie the knot with a noose, huh? Well, if she didn't, I bet she started to suspect when she found the ring around her collar, huh? Well, I've got to fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is a count warning wives that marriage isn't worth getting choked up about, huh?
Playhouse now returns control of your radio device to you until next week.
No.